This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. As we move into the winter season, a very happy Hanukkah to many of our listeners who are celebrating or just celebrated by the time they listen to this podcast. And we're coming right up against the Christmas holidays, and we're experiencing some real cold winter weather here in New York. Winter's finally arrived.
Yes.
Excuse me. And before we get into questions, by the way, questions can come to us to radioprogram, one word, radioprogram@AOL.com. I'm here with Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence, master's degree in nutrition, as well as RD licensure, registered dietitian. And before we get into questions, we have a lot of them today. I just wanted to follow up to a question that we had. I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, Layla. Didn't we have a question, something to the effect of, we want to read
about
that question
again?
Yeah,
the benthotiamine.
No, actually, this is about the nicotinamide riboside.
That was about.
Okay, we'll talk about benthotiamine in a minute. But nicotinamide riboside, or brand name Niacel, something that I've been talking about for at least a couple of years, one of my favorite supplements these days. It's a real breakthrough supplement because it builds NAD, which is an energy substance that's very important virtually everywhere.
Yes.
In a way similar to coenzyme Q10, but really working in a complementary fashion to coenzyme Q10 to power the mitochondria, to power the cells. And possibly also to slow aging and to slow degenerative changes, particularly in the brain. That's a particular concern. And and you know, something that on a day-to-day basis may help fatigue patients. So we got a question, you may not still have it, but it was something to the effect of, like, Dr. Hoffman, you were so up on nicotinamide riboside, in light of the latest studies, are you still up on it?
Right.
And at the time I said, you know, I absolutely am up on it, but I have to say that it's been a couple of months since we've seen the research. And I said that many research projects are underway and the results will be rolled out, you know, in coming months and in coming years. And so this is the update, just hot off the presses. And it's research published in the journal Nature. Now, that's the number one scientific journal in the world. That really is.
I mean, is it really?
Yeah, because it you know, there are Journal of the American Medical Association, because that's medical, occasionally nutritional stuff, but Nature comprises all aspects of science. So for an article like this to make it into Nature, that is huge. That's a real, that, you know, when you submit an article, you hope to get it into a top journal, but then you may get it into, like, the, I don't know, the Polynesian Journal of, you know, botany or something. It's like, okay, you know, circulation 200, you know, it's in medical libraries. Nobody reads it, but you know, you can read it online. This is a journal that all scientists in the world pay a lot of attention to. Anyway, headline, nicotinamide riboside shown to improve mitochondrial energy production and memory in Alzheimer's disease research. So the research was done at the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne in Switzerland, which is a big, you know, scientific institution. They found that in Alzheimer's disease, one theory about Alzheimer's is that it's the result of depletion of the mitochondrial energy production. So they've demonstrated that in Alzheimer's disease, in previous studies, mitochondrial energy output is reduced. And the mitochondrial stress response, which helps to repair the mitochondria and sustain their activity, is inactivated. So the mitochondria can't renew. So reasoning that mitochondrial function might be restored by something like NAD, this research team tested nicotinamide riboside. Mm-hmm. They call it a recently discovered vitamin and an effective NAD booster. And what he showed in mice, not yet in humans, but in mice, which is promising, that Alzheimer's disease mice treated with nicotinamide riboside had lower degrees of amyloid deposits. That's the gunk that clogs the brain of patients with Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And also, they had better performance on maze. So typically what they do is they put the mice in a maze, mm-hmm. and they see how quickly they find the cheese, or they find whatever, target. And they found that there was improved maze performance in aging mice in relationship to this. They also did, and that's not in this summary here, but I read the article, they did some testing of the synapses in the brains of these mice, and they found that there were less in the way of changes that predicted Alzheimer's.
Wow.
So there you have it. I mean, I think that's even more evidence that we're really onto something here, that this is mm-hmm. a principle that's not just a flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. And, I have a young relative, and he's like a sort of a Google guy, a Silicon Valley guy, one of these kids, whiz kids. Who knows what they do? Uh-huh. They just make money. I mean, they're very facile, but don't even ask me what this guy does professionally. But he's also, he's very smart. He's very technical. He said, hey, Uncle Ron, mm-hmm. What's the story on this stuff? It's so highly touted. And I was able to send him this study. Mm-hmm. And next thing I know, I look in FullScript and I see he's ordered, because he said he needs something for brain power and to power his workouts.
Yeah.
And so, I said, he asked me, because he saw ads for it, and he said, is this the real deal? And I said, unlike many things that are touted on the internet, some of these things, frankly, it's kind of shabby marketing.
Exactly.
This is the real deal.
Yeah. Being a constituent of the metabolism, I think specifically the Krebs cycle is where nicotinamide riboside is working as a derivative of vitamin B3, niacin. So it does, because it flows there, because it's working there, direct response is more energy. We've seen firsthand with many of our patients and mm-hmm. clients who have reported that their energy has gotten better or their fatigue has actually lifted. So this is
and I generally recommend the 250 milligrams twice mm-hmm. daily to get the full effect. It's available as 125, which is cheaper, but I would mm-hmm. take 250 twice daily. And it's available through FullScript. As listeners, you can sign up for FullScript and you can get it.
Yeah.
Made by a company called Thorn.
All right. Well, Dr. Hoffman, speaking of Alzheimer's, we actually have a couple of questions here, related topics here. Dear Dr. Hoffman, excellent analysis of that canola oil Alzheimer's study, which I guess you talked about on your radio show.
So let's summarize that. Mm-hmm. there's this new evidence that canola oil is not only not beneficial, it's been touted as heart healthy.
It's got some omega-3.
Well,
not a lot.
No, not so much omega-3. It's the monounsaturated fat.
Yeah.
So it's a leap of faith. On the one hand, we know that olive oil is beneficial. So what in olive oil is beneficial? Well, olive oil is a monounsaturated fat, mm-hmm. but also contains a lot of valuable polyphenols.
Yes.
Canola oil, the story on canola oil is that it was, it is actually, the original name of it is rapeseed oil.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. so I did a little research on this, and it turns out that rapeseed oil was an industrial oil used for lubrication, and it became very popular in World War II when our access to oil supplies, where we were getting a lot of oil from the Indonesia, from Royal Dutch Shell, the Japanese occupied that part of the world, mm-hmm. and so they were looking for substitutes, synthetic oils that were from vegetables to lubricate machinery, and they found that rapeseed oil works great. The only problem is that rapeseed oil is very high in something called erucic acid, which is highly toxic and can cause...
Lorenzo's Oil, the movie.
Well, it's... Do you remember? That's the good oil.
That's the good oil.
But this is a bad oil.
Right.
Erucic acid is actually toxic to the heart. It can cause Cushan's disease, which is a damage, causes damage to the heart, fibrosis of the heart. So it's very toxic. So what, at the end of the war, it was like, okay, thank you very much. We don't need oil so much for all this war material. And we now have access to the industrial oil again from, you know, Indonesia. Shell is back in business, sending us oil products from that part of the world.
So they have all this rapeseed oil now.
So they have all this rapeseed oil. It's, they're thinking like, oh my God, this is a big industry in Canada. What are they going to do? So they said, let's see if we can get rid of the bad erucic acid, refine it out of there, and then we can maybe sell it as a healthy oil. Because after all, it has a lot of monounsaturated fat like olive oil. It's much cheaper.
Mm.
And, you know, in Canada, you can't grow olives.
Yeah.
So we're going to make it. And they did. And they also sold it to the scientific establishment, who then popularized it and said, this is heart healthy.
Mm-hmm. This is all for their economic gain.
Yeah, truly. And so the problem is that the monounsaturated fat is not really the business end of the olive oil. What is really good in the olive oil are the polyphenols,
yes,
the, you know, hydroxytyrosol and oleuropein, mm-hmm, oleocanthal, these compounds, mm-hmm, that are these you know, aromatic compounds that give the flavor to olive oil, not so much the monounsaturated fats. So anyway, so coming back to this study.
Yes.
Long segue, long story short.
Right.
They fed canola oil to mice, and they found kind of like the opposite of this NAD study. They said not only did it not protect, but it actually accelerated these deleterious changes and you know, impaired the performance of these mice.
So if it does this in mice, what might it do to us?
One critique of this, and one of my astute Facebook followers pointed this out, they said they used like 2 tablespoons per animal per day.
Oh, they were swimming in it. That's a vat.
Yeah.
To you and me.
So,
yeah,
to the equivalent of like how many, you know, literally probably cups of canola oil for a human every day.
Right.
So it's a little hard to extrapolate from that.
Mm.
So
not great methodology, really.
Not great inference, mm-hmm, is that I think, so the researchers actually drew the conclusion that, and they wanted in their commentary, they said, well, they say that canola oil is heart healthy, but look at this, and this is maybe negative and bad for people. But they should have said, and I didn't notice this, I read the whole article, they should have said, but we gave enormous amounts of this to these animals, and it's hard to imagine that a comparable effect could be obtained in humans with the amount that most people consume.
Sure.
Now, my response to that is, I used to eat a lot of canola oil mayonnaise.
Hmm.
So I was getting a lot of canola oil into me, even though I wasn't using much canola oil in cooking. It's not bad in cooking, but I wouldn't use it in a salad dressing because it's waste, you know.
No.
But if you want to saute something, maybe, you know.
Hmm.
But I've stopped using it. I long stopped using it because I think it's worthless.
It is.
And, you know, it's highly refined.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really bleached oil. It's through
all the vegetable oils, especially the light oils. And I have a lot of people tell me, no, I don't like the flavor of extra virgin olive oil. First cold press is too strong for me. I like the lighter olive oil. And then I tell them, I actually have this conversation
today.
It's devitalized. It's been bleached to lighten it.
Yeah.
It's been deodorized.
Right.
Why would we consume that after it's been treated that way?
It's
not
because
fit
we have a that kind of palate, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But oh my, yeah.
So
Gene is actually asking, because of this canola oil Alzheimer's study, have there been similar studies with other types of oil? Could consuming that much of any oil cause similar results?
Right. So interestingly, I thought about that question. The answer is no. There have not been studies per se that look at each individual oil.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are some studies that suggest that consuming a lot of soy may have an association with greater likelihood of dementia. This is a study, very controversial study out of done in Hawaii, I think, where they looked at Asian men who consumed a lot of tofu versus not much tofu.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that the ones who consumed more tofu had a greater propensity towards dementia.
Wow.
Yeah, but that study hasn't been repeated, and it's not clear that it wasn't more than an association rather than a causation. What we do know is that soy oil worsens metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance.
Yes.
That's been shown. That's actually recently came out. And so one might infer that it could cause brain changes that are adverse. And then we know, as you stated earlier, that the refined oils, there are studies, and Walter Willett, who's possibly America's foremost nutritionist at Harvard, has pointed out that there may be in excess of 60,000 deaths annually that are due to our current, the switcheroo that we did where we took people off of butter and lard and put them on refined omega-6 polyunsaturated oils.
Yes.
Deaths due to cardiovascular disease and possibly cancer and inflammatory disorders.
And Alzheimer's being an inflammatory disorder to some degree, and the omega-6 oils being so pro-inflammatory as well. And if there's any good oil at all, Gene, it's coconut oil, because
and then there's a positive, on that.
A positive on that. So coconut oil being beneficial because it throws the body into ketosis, lipolysis ketosis, demanding that fat burning be the first metabolic activity that happens.
It's a source of MCTs, medium chain triglycerides.
Yes, and that could be, and the brain, an Alzheimer's brain, a type 3 diabetes brain, if we may also call it that, if it's a metabolic disease, that the brain prefers ketones. So this is how coconut oil would be beneficial. But not only that, we had had a question, let's follow up on another one having to do about B1. We talked last week about thiamine being effective.
While we're on the subject of Alzheimer's.
Of Alzheimer's, again. And there was a study about a particular form of a lipid-soluble.
So if I could recall that discussion. The discussion was, is B1 or thiamine beneficial for the brain? Well, we know that there's a brain disorder that occurs in the United States, primarily in alcoholics, called Wernicke's encephalopathy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. I read a case of... this actually was interesting. This was actually a case where medical students who just graduated medical school were applying to the Mayo Clinic, was it? One of the prestigious residencies. And the question they asked them was, here's a scenario. This woman on dialysis suddenly develops nystagmus, which is eye rolling movements that are, you know, associated with neurological disease. What's the diagnosis? And who would get that? Nobody would get that. But it turns out that the answer was, on dialysis, you get a depletion of your water-soluble vitamins, and you can get you can get Wernicke's encephalopathy.
Wow.
Which is a B1 deficiency.
Yes.
Okay, this is a little...
thiamine deficiency.
Right. So if you answer that question correctly, you were accepted to, you know, they would say, we're going to give you carte blanche, your, you know, full scholarship. You're going to be accepted to this medical program. So I would hope that, you know, if I were to be, you know, go back in time and be asked that question, I could get it right. So nutrition occasionally plays a role in conventional medicine. So anyway, so B1 helpful, maybe. But what about more targeted B1?
To the brain.
Right. So there, and I came across this benfotiamine, which is definitely something that could be helpful for the nerves in diabetes. It might be helpful for diabetic neuropathy.
Yes.
There is a trial underway in like 2014, benfotiamine for early cognitive decline to see if it prevented Alzheimer's disease. I never saw the results published, which suggests that either it was discontinued or the study was a flop. And now this article sheds light on that. Now, we talked last week about benfotiamine as being plausible, but there may be something better, and that is something called allethiamine.
Okay.
The reason being is that benfotiamine, according to the article that you know you may read a little bit of here, is not really fat-soluble, and it has to be...
It needs to be a lipid-soluble thiamine.
So thiamine is a water-soluble vitamin. Benfotiamine, it was thought, was a little more lipid-soluble, but according to the article that we have here, it's not.
Right.
And so it doesn't get into the brain, which is a big fat head. You know, we are fat heads, you know, and the brain is made of lipids.
Yes.
And so water-soluble vitamins mm-hmm. have trouble getting into the brain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's better if we got a lipid-soluble thiamine, and that's called allethiamine. And
okay.
there's a company that makes it. It's called it's like ecological research or something.
Ecological formulas?
Ecological formulas,
yeah.
And they sell that product on Fullscript, by the way, for those of you who subscribe to Fullscript. Yeah, and that's good. You know, I'm actually going to recommend that as part of a protocol for Alzheimer's prevention for cognitive protection,
Great.
That form of B1.
Even memory enhancement for
right.
people who may be critically low in thiamine.
Yeah, right.
Which is more common than is believed.
Is there anything that's written in plain English in this article, or is it too technical?
It's very dry.
Okay.
It's very, very dry. But it's interesting that the water-soluble benfotiamine, thiamine B1, is basically available to the periphery, the cells in the periphery, but not necessarily crossing the blood-brain barrier.
However,
so it's really the fat-soluble version.
When an alcoholic comes into the ER, you know, at Bellevue, they still give them
Get a banana bag, which is B vitamins.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And perlite, potassium. And potassium.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, they can't go in too fast. If it goes in too fast, you can get anaphylaxis. You can kill someone with a shot of thiamine.
Wow.
If you can't, it should be given slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Okay, so here's
Alzheimer's.
Conclusion. Our results show that oral administration of benpotiamine leads to significant increases in thiamine in the blood and liver, but not in the brain.
Yes.
Therefore,
hence the benefit of a lipid-soluble version.
Yeah. So a clear distinction should be made between lipophilic thiamine, like allethiamine and benfotiamine.
Yeah.
So that's the latest from, 2017, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so now the supplement is from Ecological Formulas. Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
It's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's sort of a supplement that is in search of a purpose.
Mm.
You know, and it was, now there's more evidence that it might be the neurologically potent form of vitamin B1.
Yeah. That's great. That's wonderful. And this was from Elaine. We were following up on your question that we talked about thiamine last week. So there you have it. More on benfotiamine.
So, and right. another reason to listen to each and every episode, because we refine our answers from week to week. Our answer, I think, mea culpa, our answer was maybe a little bit less than complete. And so we did a little additional research to clean that up.
Yeah. So there you have it.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a good point at which to pause, because we divide our podcast into two parts. Not to interrupt you, but give us a preview of what we're going to be talking about in part two.
Dr. Hoffman, I often get into a fit of sneezing after a meal. What's going on?
Oh, okay. Well, we'll tackle that phenomenon when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist in residence. And this is our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. You can send us questions and over the Christmas holiday. Maybe you'll have time to shoot us an email with your health concern and hear what we have to say about it. This is Intelligent Medicine.